Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And certainly over the years here on The Extra, we have talked about drug abuse and abuse numbers and recovery from drug addiction. And certainly today is a day when we need to focus the topic of conversation toward that. Today is National Drug Abuse Recovery Day, and we're speaking with an expert in recovery, in substance abuse, and also how to coach people through crises with addiction. And that is Scott Silverman, who is an author of a book called The Opioid Epidemic, which was released in 2021. Scott, welcome to the show on this important day.
Well, thank you so much. It's really nice to be here, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about it, because we're not going to change things, and we're not going to reduce the stigma if we don't talk about it.
Well, let's talk about why this is becoming an ever-growing problem. I mean, I was mentioning to you before the show, when we were just on the line, that in Colorado, we are now seeing 2 deaths daily from fentanyl-related opioid overdose deaths. And that is something that is shocking to a state, even in a state that has legalized marijuana.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because it's like this perfect storm right now. The replacement of OxyContin, if you will, traditionally licensed, manufactured, distributed, DEA-controlled pain medications, pretty much been eliminated from distribution because of all the controversy and what's gone on. Of course, the manufacturer is involved with major lawsuits. But what's happening is the person who has been drug seeking or has been addicted to or is addicted to opioids, you know, just because they stop making a certain drug doesn't mean their addiction goes away. So as they seek alternatives or replacements, they're picking up counterfeit medication, and in that counterfeit medication is the drug fentanyl, which is very dangerous, very toxic. And here, you know, in Southern California, we talk about it and speak of it as a poison, not even as a drug. So when you accidentally get it mixed in something you're taking and don't know it's there, or even if you know it's there, you don't know what the potency looks like, and by taking it, you can accidentally overdose and die. And that's what's happening. People don't know what's going in their body or the dosage amount, and they're ending up expiring through either experimentation or trying to seek self-medication or just desiring ways to find different ways to get high. So it is a dangerous situation we're in right now because you don't know what you don't know.
Scott, we are still in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We are reaching, hopefully, a lighter end of it as the Delta variant is easing somewhat. And I say somewhat, you know, very qualified somewhat there. But has the opioid epidemic worsened because of COVID?
The simple answer is absolutely yes, without a doubt, and it's undisputable. And here's the primary reason why. Think about it. We're quarantined at home. We've experienced, you know, economic changes like we've never seen. We're dealing with a situation, you know, where there's the political issue and the fighting that's going on. Do this, don't do that. And I'm going to get into the specifics. I don't think it's relevant to our conversation. But it's, again, a perfect storm. And when you think about it, people, it's not just drug overdoses. Alcohol sales are up 75% in our country during the quarantine. And prescription medications are being written at a higher rate than ever before. People are self-medicating more than ever before. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, how do we cope with what's going on right now? Kids have been out of school. Kids have been doing things their own way for well over almost 19 months now. So when you think about it, parents who have had to manage this environment have had 4 or 5 times more things they have to do in areas they've never experienced before. And to me, to be honest, and I don't want to sound anything other than realistic, the repercussions of this behavioral health and mental health outcome of what's taken place with COVID, whenever that switch gets flipped, and it will, we're going to see a lot more of what's going on now because people have not done well with coping with it. And that's a fact, not an opinion.
Right. So these are people who are dealing with addiction as one of their coping mechanisms for getting through the pandemic is what you're saying.
Well, not only people dealing with addiction or self-medicating, but the other family members who have had to witness it. So, for example, let's just say Johnny 2 years ago had a, you know, a little bit of an issue with self-medicating, whether it's, you know, Xanax at night, maybe Adderall in the morning, and potentially drinking in the afternoon. You know, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, your state's got legalized marijuana. California has legalized marijuana. And we're seeing a huge consumption increase in marijuana. And there's other issues around that we could certainly talk about if you want to. So by combining these different things, the person who may have just been a teetotaler or a sampler or a casual user may have increased to a potential level of abuse. And those who were predisposed with addiction issues now are in a full-blown active self-medication that they can't control. So those are the kind of things that have happened during the quarantine that, unfortunately, there's no studies yet, but the indicators are the calls that I'm getting, the families I'm talking to, and my colleagues in the treatment world, we're seeing it, we're hearing it, and it's overwhelming. And for the county-funded programs where people don't have resources privately for insurance, the wait list, in many cases, to get access to treatment can be weeks, if not months.
And when it comes to that, the facts are bearing this out, right? The stats?
Well, my biggest data source now for the morbidity rate comes from the medical examiner. You're absolutely right. It's the autopsy. So it's not a matter of, gee, I think it's getting worse. The data comes from the medical examiner. The DEA is talking about the different arrests, the DA's office that are prosecuting the crimes, the arrests that are taking place. And when they test people that are being arrested, here in San Diego, for example, 90% of the people arrested are under the influence or have something that's mood altering their system. A large, and something we haven't even spoke about yet, is the rise in methamphetamine nationally. So it is a very unusual time right now, and you're absolutely right. The facts are there. You can't make this stuff up, is what I'm trying to say. And I try to stay upbeat by building awareness and informing, not to, you know, be the Debbie Downer of the information, but we definitely, as a society, have to become increase our heightened awareness, especially with young people who are going to these parties and doing the things that young people do. But the things they're picking up and taking in their body now are killing them. That's the point. We have got situations where people are putting things in their body, and that poison is killing them. It's not getting them high. It's killing them.
Not a party drug, something that can have far worse consequences. Okay, we're talking here on The Extra with Scott Silverman, author of The Opioid Epidemic. He's also a leading substance abuse expert and crisis coach, as well as being a former addict. When we come back, we're going to talk to Scott about the five telltale signs that someone is addicted. That's when we come back here on The Extra. We're back on The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today, we are talking to author Scott Silverman. It is National Drug Abuse Recovery Day. And Scott, you bring a very personal experience to your expertise with this subject. Why don't you tell us?
Well, you know, thank you for that question. I'm personally in long-term recovery, and this year we'll be bumping into, if you will, November 13th. My 38th year of recovery, which is, you know, continuous recovery, which means I haven't had a drink or a drug in all those years. And that's not to brag. It's just simply to say that it can be done. There is hope. There is help. And so when I talk about the disease of addiction, when I talk about as a subject matter expert, I'm not approaching this from a clinical perspective. I'm approaching it from a real life, real experience perspective. And one of the things I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Janet, is invite your listeners. If you're hearing my voice today or you're hearing us talk about this, my phone number is 619-993-2738. 619-993-2738. You can call or text me. And for the whole month of September, I'm giving away 15 minutes of free coaching. And I put my number out there, and I don't care where you are in the world. You can call or text me. We can find a way to connect. And if I can help you, help a loved one, that is what I get up every morning for. And if you can connect with me, and it's not hard, you just do that. Or just Google me, Scott H. Silverman, and find me through my website, Your Crisis Coach, and we'll talk about how we can help you navigate next steps to help someone you care about. So the signs are real straightforward. Most people in families, when they ask that question, I ask the question back. If somebody in your family is having a bad day, what signs do you see? They're pretty clear. If someone's having a good day, what signs do you see? That's pretty clear. What's opaque is when someone's under the influence of the mood altering. But when you think about it, it's really not that opaque. That's a major behavioral shift, lack of sleep, too much sleep, not sleeping, behavioral changes, weight loss, weight gain, changes in relationships. This is an easy one. Jewelry missing in the house. People are taking advantage of, someone who's not watching, because why would you watch your children and take an inventory on your jewelry every day? Cash is missing. It bumps into the law, obviously. New friends coming around the house that have a whole different tone and tenor from those that have been there before. Those are probably the key ones. And then, of course, someone's attitude changes pretty quickly, especially if they're under the influence. And a parent can see it. They just don't know what it is. So part of what a parent can do is start to get some information by A, calling names, someone in their community, talking to their primary physician, maybe even a family member who's experienced this. Because in today's world, Shannon, 15% of our country suffers from some form of addiction that will arise in the next 12 months. But here's an interesting fact that's even more revealing. Those individuals who are impaired, they will impact 7 people negatively every single day. So if 70% of the population is impacted by 15% of the population, that means 85% of our country are bumping into this or rubbing up against it or being influenced by it every single day. So the fact that we're not talking about this every single day, and we haven't shared yet, and I will, over 250 people die in this country every single day behind opioids. That's overdosing from some either prescription opioids, counterfeit medication, fentanyl-infused marijuana, or crack cocaine or methamphetamine. That's a plane crash every day. You and I should be talking about this every day. 250 people, think about that. And then the families are being impacted by it. And that number does not count alcohol. That number does not count methamphetamine or marijuana or suicide or any other issue that creates a morbidity at the end of the use of the day. So when you think about those numbers, this has to become as important as the carbon footprint. This has to be as important as solar energy, if not more so, because when you think about this and you annualize those numbers, in 10 years, we're going to lose a generation.
Oh, boy. And when you're talking, though, to a child, a teenager, say, about this problem, so often they dismiss, like, oh, mom, oh, dad, you don't need to worry. I'm fine. Nothing happened. So what are the ways to actually get in and dig deeper and not be dismissed, not have it automatically rejected out of hand? Because, even if they are not starting with opioids, there are certain behaviors that are kind of entry level into that drug abuse world. So what would you suggest to people who may be listening out there?
Yeah. My new book, The Opioid Epidemic, was clearly written, every single page, every single chapter, to answer questions like that. So it's a not only a GPS, it's not only a clear guide, it's not only a book for somebody who's never experienced it, but if you've had it in your family but don't know how to navigate, by the way, who in God's name has ever given these tools on how to navigate this? Mm-hmm. I've learned it over the years, A, from my own recovery, B, I'm in the treatment provision business, and C, I'm also a crisis coach, family navigator, and have been for decades. So I've had a chance to hear the questions, talk to the family. So to answer your question, I like to simplify it this way. God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth. As parents, and as a parent with young children, young, 30, 35, but they watched their dad in recovery for years. They never saw me under the influence, thank God. But I've dealt with families thousands over the years. What I've learned, and I think the experience tells the truth, that if you as a parent can share information that you want to get from your child. When I say share information, that means you want them to get educated and learn by telling them, by giving them a handout, if you will, on what they should do and shouldn't do. That doesn't work. As kids, we don't want to hear we can't do something. As young people, we don't want to be told not to do this and not to do that. Those are trigger words. So what I suggest is when the conversation comes up, and you can go with third party, here's an example. we'll use Johnny again. Johnny, I was talking to my friend today, and she was telling me that her son's best friend just bumped into somebody who lost their life. They're sharing about it. What's going on out there? Can you educate me? So you're looking to inquire, and by asking a question versus making a statement, you have probably a 75% better chance of somebody sharing with you than not. And when they
responding.
Go off with the analogy you gave, you know, I don't want to, you know, you don't know, you don't get it. Just here's one. Tell me more. Three words. Tell me more. And then what's important as a parent, be quiet. Listen, you'll know what to do next because that will come to you.
Scott, I want to continue with this point, but we do need to take a break here for traffic, weather, and some news. So we're taking a break here on The Extra. We'll be back in just a few moments with Scott Silverman, author of The Opioid Epidemic. We're back with Scott Silverman, the author of The Opioid Epidemic, as we observe nationwide National Drug Abuse Recovery Day here in September. And Scott, you were mentioning right before we went to break, ask an open and if you're a parent wanting to find out more about a child's potential substance abuse issues, ask an open-ended question, tell me more. And then what was that last bit? Repeat that again.
Well, that's the big one, is tell me more, and then listen as a parent. And when I say listen, don't just hope for an answer that you like. Clearly stop. Take a deep breath and really, really hear what your child is saying. Because if somebody thinks they know more than you do, they'll generally give you an opportunity to learn if you'll let them. The difficulty as a parent, you're in a hurry, you have an agenda, you want to try to save your child's life. I don't mean to oversimplify it by saying agenda, but your day is full, you have lots to do, and you just heard about this crisis. I mean, this morning, since we've been, you know, talking, forgive me for multitasking, I've gotten over 15 texts from different people about the opioid epidemic growing more than ever before, counterfeit medication getting into schools, vaping marijuana laced with fentanyl. I mean, this is how active it's gotten right now. And because the quarantine's starting to open up and because COVID's somewhat under control, we're having this conversation now because we're seeing a whole new population come out of this quarantine of population of thinking and dealing and coping. So by listening as a parent is so important, and use both your ears. And then when you're done listening, if your child is starting to talk a little bit or expose some information or share about a friend, because there's not a kid in America right now that doesn't know somebody that's been impacted by this crisis.
Right, right.
You know, no matter what the drug is.
What,
so talk to them. They're look, they have a lot of information. Tap into it.
What do you do if you identify then that if someone you love needs help? What's the next step?
Get educated. You know, if you and I were talking about diabetes, and diabetes, by the way, as a disease, the piece of the brain that's wired is a little different, is similar to what happens with the disease of addiction. Meaning, if somebody displayed anything that looked like diabetes, you would immediately take them to the appropriate experts, do an intake, have an assessment done, have the blood work done, and hopefully the medical experts would tell you what's going on, what you need to do, and what the plan would be each day to have a good quality life. Same thing with the disease of addiction. Now, let's just say your family member isn't one of the 15%, but you suspect that they may be under the influence of something mood altering or maybe self-medicating. Get educated. Go online. Do a deeper dive. Contact me. Talk to clinical experts in your area. Talk to your primary physician. Go to your faith-based leaders. There is somebody in your sphere of influence that has experienced this, I promise you, and they'll be able to help give you some suggestions on a local level of what you can do next. And if nothing else, get my book, Opioid Epidemic. I mean, by the way, 3 years ago when I started this journey in the book, that was not the name of the book. The name got changed because I was watching with my co-writer what was happening in the world. So we decided to change the title, and I had no idea 3 years ago things were going to be as bad as they are today. And when I and that was before we knew about and we experienced COVID. So what's happening in the world when you think about it? Drug manufacturers offshore, and I don't want to mention any countries because we all kind of know who they are. We're their biggest consumer, the United States. So they are competing for market share. Think about that as a business person. They are competing for market share in the U.S. So they're doing everything they can to get their product out wherever possible. The dark web, I just read recently, last 2 days, they had the biggest bust ever. And the dark web, it's almost impossible, according to the DEA, to make these busts because with the dark web, you have, you know, IP addresses that are very, very hard to find. So we're up against a very difficult enemy, and that's my competition. That's the way I look at that. So when you see something going on as a parent or a family member, a coworker, a colleague, or a neighbor, or a college student or high school student, get informed. Period. Get informed.
Excellent advice there. We're going to take a short break here. We're talking to Scott Silverman, the author of the book, The Opioid Epidemic. And Scott also offers up his phone number for people to text or call for information or if they need any help in some of these tasks that we're talking about. Scott, what's that number again?
It is 619-993-2738. And don't worry about the area code because we can do anything we need to do virtually. And there's resources in your community. I'll help you navigate and find those so we can get on this immediately. And I generally return phone calls with the same business day. And I look forward to getting strange numbers in my phone because that means I may be able to help save a life. So call or text me.
Excellent. Well, when we come back, we'll continue the conversation here on The Extra with Scott, and we'll talk about the lies that people who might be qualified as high-functioning addicts tell themselves. That and much more as The Extra continues here on KRDO News Radio. We're back with The Extra, Scott Silverman, author and recovering addict, celebrating almost 38 years of hard-fought-for sobriety this November. And Scott, first of all, let me say that all of us really applaud your dedication to this cause, your dedication to a sober life. Very difficult after, you know, dealing with things with drugs as an addict, I'm sure. Let's talk about any ways that parents can maybe approach this school year, because we just really launched into it, on keeping our kids, our teens, drug-free this school year.
Well, I think probably, you know, there's a lot of science around what works. And unfortunately, there isn't a lot of what works. One of the things is sitting down at dinner, and as you discuss, you know, what's the next month look like? How's school going? Bring up the topic if they don't. Or just say, I read in the news today. Is it true? You know, the facts you and I talked about earlier. You know, you have 2 overdoses a day in your community. You know, and that's what you said, I believe, right? 2 overdoses?
2 overdoses statewide, yes. But still, that's significant. Okay. Some of them are in the community, of course.
Correct. And what's interesting is a day, it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you say 60 a month, and then you ask the question, what was it last month? What was it last year? And you start to project out some of that data because it doesn't slow down. There is not a community in our country right now where the overdose rate has slowed down. And there's not a part of our country where alcohol consumption has slowed down or the morbidity rate has decreased. So it's going up everywhere. It doesn't matter what the zip code is. It doesn't matter whether it's high income, low income, you know, minority, whatever you want to label it as. But people who have less information are potentially having higher negative outcomes because it's hard to get the information out there. And there are a lot of different groups that are isolated, if you will, or smaller communities where they don't see the news as often, and all of a sudden somebody brings some counterfeit medication to the community, and you see 8-9 overdoses in a weekend from a party. So the idea is to have the conversation with your children, do it as softly as you possibly can, and know that in 10 minutes on a sit-down, you're not going to get all the answers. Not only that, you're certainly not going to provide any, you know, all the solutions. So know it's a process of educating, informing, and listening.
In my personal life, I can say that within my circle, I have been in close contact with three what I would call high-functioning addicts. I mean, they functioned, they went to jobs, they, for the most part, maintained relationships until the bottom fell out, as it does with addiction. But what do you say to people who consider themselves high-functioning addicts? I mean, because they're not really, correct?
Well, you know, it's an interesting term, high-functioning. I was a high-functioning alcoholic. And all that meant to me at the time was I was still working. I was under the influence every waking hour that I could be. And I had a mortgage. I got married. And in theory, I was a high-functioning alcoholic and drug addict until I wasn't. It's kind of like, you know, willpower doesn't work. And I want to share a kind of a peculiar example. But I heard this guy share, you know, and I go to four meetings a week. I do it through Zoom now because it's just the way it's set up. But to be able to have access to the connectivity in the recovery community is something that's so important for me personally, because without it, I couldn't do this alone. There's no way I could do this alone. And when people who have, you know, this high functioning attitude that, look, I'm making millions of dollars a year, you know, well, I get all that. So where are you at with life, and how are things really going? And if everything's going fine, don't change a thing. But you know what? If those three DUIs you got last year, if that $500,000 you lost in the gambling situation, if that $1 million that you loaned to a friend you can't remember who it was because you were under the influence, those might be some small indicators that you're not high functioning as you might think you are. So what happens is over time, this disease of addiction, this mood altering substances, this self-medication, it does not get better on its own. So when I hear people say, look, I'm managing my life, well, first of all, if they're talking to me, that means someone suggested they contact me. And if they're talking to me, there might be something else going on. By the way, most people don't just self-medicate because it's a hobby. There's something else going on. Mental health issues, depression, anxiety, catastrophic events, whatever you can imagine is out there. And like as you shared, Jan, thanks for sharing that. People in your sphere of influence, they've lost somebody to something. And, you know, look, it's sad enough with cancer and what's going on with, you know, with COVID and losing families, but this is treatable. Substance use disorders are treatable, and there is hope and there is help. And that's what we have to spend our time getting educated on, how we get that navigated. Because the person who has the addiction suffers from a disease of denial and the inability to feel feelings. So basically, no matter where they are, unless they're handcuffed to a gurney at a hospital, they probably don't know that they really have a problem. I think Robert Downey Jr. said it best in one of his quotes I'll use. He said, every time I do cocaine, this was years ago, I break out in handcuffs.
You know, Robert Downey Jr. has gone through so much, and a lot of it was lived in the headlines. So not only did he break out in handcuffs, but he also broke out in news items. So, you know, his addiction played out definitely on a national stage. Sometimes, though, you have people who are doing their utmost, lie after lie after lie, because they're afraid of the shame and stigma that's attached to addiction. And certainly that's understandable at a certain level, but how does one overcome this? How does the person in addiction, how does the family around them, how do they overcome this?
Well, there's, you know, I get in trouble every time I say this, but for some reason I just continue to say it, because if I get in trouble, but somebody, you know, tells a loved one and they hear it, there are three skills that a substance use disorder individual who's suffering from the disease of addiction, three skills that they use on a daily basis. And to some degree, this does stigmatize, but it's a tool, and I want families to use it. There's three things. I get the question all the time. How do I know if my loved one is telling me the truth? And I ask the question, why would you ask that question? Well, I think they're under the influence. I found this going on. There's empty bottles of liquor. Whatever example they gave, I said, well, if you think they're under the influence, the odds are they might be. So understand this. If somebody you love and care about is self-medicating, the odds are they are lying, cheating, and manipulating the truth. Now, that's the part people say that I shouldn't say because it stigmatizes. But here's the thing. As a person in recovery, that's what I did when I was using, and I learned that in recovery. I did that because I did not want to embarrass my family. I did that because I wanted to cover my own shame and fear and anxiety around the fact that for some reason, when I woke up, I needed to do something to feel better. When I went to sleep, I needed to do something to feel better. So I wasn't doing it to hurt anybody, but what I was doing, I saw was hurting people. So I didn't tell people about it. I lied about it. I manipulated the truth because I did not want someone feeling ill about me, and I didn't want to embarrass my family. And I had a pretty close, and still do, close family. So that's the problem with this disease. So when you see that's going on, and the only reason I give those three, you know, clues, lying, cheating, manipulating, is if you have a loved one who's doing that, if that's truly going on, don't condemn them for it. Understand, they have an illness. And if they have an illness, and by the way, substance use disorders is the only illness that we treat people differently. Meaning you walk into a hospital and you don't look like you're really ready to recover. You know, you look like a high bottom. That we don't do that with a broken arm. We don't do that with diabetes. We don't do that with cancer, heart disease, or anybody comes in with a high fever. We don't say, you know, you're not sick enough, go home. But we do that with this disease of addiction. So know that that is what someone does to keep their cocoon closed so others can't see what's going on. So that's a tell right there when someone's doing that. And by knowing that what's coming out of their mouth may not be the truth, you as the loved one can do something a little bit differently. And that's sometimes how change happens first.
Well, Scott Silverman, we hope and pray that your words are reaching people in need, people seeking answers who may be listening today. And again, if you'd like to find out more about Scott Silverman, his background, his book, you can go to his website, yourcrisiscoach.com. And Scott, we appreciate that you've been here and offering this information and your expertise and lending it so willingly in hopes that others may find some truth in there for their own journey and maybe finding a way out of addiction. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio.